And welcome back. All right. We're going to talk to James Martinez for the next couple of hours about something very interesting. Here's a headline for you. Tell me where you might see this, right? You're at the checkout stand, and if your market is well-equipped with intellectual material, there'll be a National Enquirer there or something like the Weekly World News. Here's a headline. Space aliens made me blind and psychic. There's a headline for you. Well, we're going to talk about this story because there's more to it than just a kind of a frothy headline. This is going to be interesting. James, welcome back to the program. It's good to have you back on.
Hey, thank you very much. I'm really happy to be here, actually, because I've been holding on to my story with my relationship with Marianne Shenfield for a long time, and I'm glad to be killing it here with you.
Well, I'm honored that we're going to hear this for the first time here. There's if you look below, James, in guests, you'll see a link to a couple of pictures of this young lady, Marianne Shenfield, right?
Yeah, Shenfield, that's right.
Okay. Now, there's a picture of her with another young woman who looks rather like her, standing right behind her. Who is the second lady?
That's her daughter. That's her adopted daughter, who I can't remember her name because I barely spoke to her, but I did meet her a couple times. When I was at residence, long into the relationship, I met them. Yeah.
When did you first meet Marianne, and how did that come about? What brought you two together?
It's very interesting because, you recall, last time I spoke to you, I spoke to you about my relationship with Doris Van Tassel.
Yes.
And during that time in my life, I had been lucky enough to meet Doris Van Tassel, but I was also involved with Walter Boert. I was his business partner and friend and so forth. And
now, that's a whole... I didn't mean to interrupt you, but Walter Boert, that's a whole program. We really ought to do that sometime. He was an amazing human being.
Yeah. And one of the things that ties all this together is because they did talk to each other because I introduced them. But back to your original question on how I met her was strictly random because I was looking at that point because Walter and I had done an enormous amount of research regarding psychic warfare with the use of electronics specifically.
Right. Well, Walter was, Walter Boert, Boart, was the first person that I really came into contact with who knew all about this TI thing and hands-off or touch-free control of people, which was just incredible. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, so we've been preparing to put Operation Mind Control Volume 2 out, and I was publishing it and doing a lot of the central research, but the central research had to do with psychic warfare electronically. So we had been in touch with Tom Bearden at that time, who wrote the Excalibur briefing, as you know, and he was on our board, actually, of the Freedom of Thought Foundation. And when I was in Tucson, Arizona, I had heard that a guy named Dr. Andrea Buharich designed a Tesla watch, and I wanted one of those really badly. And at that time, you know, there was no internet or anything, and I had to be hunting down and calling people and writing letters and so forth, trying to acquire one of those. But while I was in Tucson, Arizona, which was where Walter lived at that point, I had found somebody, a guy that was, I don't recall his name, but he was a radionics engineer, that type of guy. And he'd been referred to me. And he said, yeah, I've got a duplicate Tesla watch that does exactly what Buharich does. And I said, well, how much is it and when can I get it and et cetera, et cetera. So I made the trip because I was living in near Palm Springs at that point, and I made the trip to Tucson and met with the radionics engineer. And I said, well, how do I know this thing works? How do I know? I have no way of knowing. And I said, can I borrow it for 48 hours and wear it and see what I feel and return it? And he goes, no, you don't need to do that. You just need to call this woman up. Her name is Marianne Shenefield. And I said, who's that? And I said, why would she know? How's she going to know if this watch works or not? And so I purchased the watch and gave him the money and said, okay, what's her number? And then that's how I met her. I called her up and said, this radionics engineer in Tucson told me to call you because I need to have this watch checked to see if it's working correctly. And she goes, oh, okay, that's easy. And goes, put it on your left hand. I goes, you don't have it on you because I'd know if you have it on you. And I was just listening to what she said. I acquired her number, called her up, and I said, okay, put it on. Then what? How can you tell that it's working? Because she was living in Ogawa, Massachusetts, and I didn't know her from Boo. I didn't even know who she was. So I put the Tesla watch on, and then something happened. I put the watch on. He says, do me a favor. Now, I want you to take off your shoes, and then I want you to stand straight up, straight erect as possible, like make sure like you're standing like you're a ballerina. Put your spine as straight as you can up, and then hold your arms out. And then I want you to turn to your left just a couple degrees, and then let me look at something. Now, I was just going with the flow, okay? I didn't know, have any idea.
That's a bit of a stretch. Yeah, okay.
It's a bit of a stretch. So I put my hands out, and he goes, that watch needs to be adjusted, but let me know if you can feel anything. And then I see the phone goes quiet, and then about 20 seconds later, the back of my neck starts to heat up, and my hair starts to tingle on the top. She goes, now can you feel that? Can you feel that? Okay, but I won't. I'm going to do it less. Like she's adjusting me like a piano or something, or a tuning fork over the phone. And I, at that point, knew that I had just met somebody phenomenal.
I would say.
Because, because I called the engineer back, and after she tested the watch, because I did some small talk with her, and she goes, you know, you're going to have to call back to make sure that thing gets adjusted from time to time. It's not the original, but it'll do for now. She was kind of like, it was a joke. The watch to her was like, you know, some faulty engineering. So I called back the guy that built it. He says, yeah, it works, but it needs to be adjusted from time to time. And I said, and where the hell did you find this person? Who is this? And then he said, well, she's, you know, one of the big abduction cases in the U.S. And I went,
and you said, abduction? What do you mean, abduction?
No, I knew what that meant.
Okay.
I knew what that meant. But at that point, I'd never experienced psychokinesis before from a distance. Not like that, ever. Because I could feel her adjusting my body from afar. And so I found out a little bit more about her, and of course I had her number, and then I called her back, and I said, you know Uri Geller, don't you? She goes, oh yeah, I know Uri. And I said, I know, I just met him. I've been up, pulled up on the stage three times or now. I'll talk with him. I said, yeah, I know Baharich, I know Uri. And she was talking to him like, yeah, he's no big deal. And he goes, yeah, I know him. So he's very competitive with him, but this was the initial beginning of like a 13-year relationship that started. And I and Walter Boward and a lot of other people during this time, we were trying to figure out what was going on in the whole abduction world at that time. Because you recall Bud Hopkins and Barney Hill and all those people that were involved. This is back when, you know, the internet was just get starting, and this was like a kind of fringe kind of side thing that was going on that people were trying to figure out what was going on. So I called her back, and then things got real interesting really fast.
May I ask a question, James? Hold on right there. Sure. That's a good place. You called her back. I'm going to hold her right there. People want to know what the Tesla watch looks like. Give us a little description. What does it look like on your wrist?
It looked like an old cheap watch is what it is, but the electronics inside it had been adjusted. So the back of it, not the face of it, but the underneath it had some type of work done on it. And I didn't care if it could tell the time. That wasn't the point. I just wanted something because I was having enormous anxiety and having problems relaxing at that point in my life. And I wanted to see if I was sensitive and picking up on a lot of the electromagnetic pollution. It was a lot less than it is today, of course. But
Those were the days.
Yeah. Exactly.
Wow.
Totally different. So that was the look of the Tesla watch, because many, 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 many years later, she arranged that I would receive the real Tesla watch from Paharaj himself. It was like a gift. This was after many years of dealing with her, which I eventually got. It was like a birthday present she gave to me because
that's
I wanted the original thing.
That's astounding. Yeah, that's talk about being honored. What did that watch look like? Was that one that Tesla had supervised the construction of, or what was the deal?
No,
with that one?
Paharaj was at that point. It's my understanding that he was the guy contracted with CIA to develop psychic warfare to match the Soviets, and he knew that or claimed that the Russians were penetrating U.S. cities and space itself with exotic bandwidth of frequencies.
That's before remote viewing, friends.
Just a little bit before.
Things got to be crazier later on, but that's pretty wild, and you're right. This goes back to the woodpecker, 1976.
That's right. You know that.
Yeah.
Most people don't know that. That's right. It's exactly right. And he was one of the people that spoke about that. And Walter was interested in trying to defeat that with other electronics. To neutralize it.
He wanted to. Oh, okay.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. That's what the point was. But so I literally, that's how I met her. And then I didn't realize that her voice would be in my ear for 13 years after that. And she was, because most people don't know this case, because this was a woman that was, she was not eager for publicity. And if she did have publicity, she wanted it the way she wanted it. Like that article that you saw there, she was not happy that that came out at all. She was very kind of vain and controlling about the whole thing, mostly because of her childhood. Because this is a case, imagine being an 11-year-old in the 50s that lives out on a farm, and you're just a farm girl out in Agawam, Massachusetts, and then you're out playing in the fields, and then one day the flying car from heaven shows up. That's what she equated it. That's what she first told her parents when she first ran into this UFO as an 11-year-old. And the occupants of that UFO landed. She was absolutely terrified, but interacted with them, and they did not look like the Greys, though they had features of the Greys. She said they looked like two small Chinese boys with space suits on. That's her 11-year-old interpretation of it. And she was taken into the craft, and as most 11-year-olds would do, started complaining and yelling and screaming, threatening them, saying she was going to tell her father about them. She didn't know what she was dealing with, really. As an 11-year-old, she thought they were Chinese or Asian descent people that were in some flying vehicle, as, you know, 11-year-old interpretation on a farm.
Sure.
But that was the beginning of the biological augmentation of what I would call calling her the top remote viewer in the world is an understatement. It's an understatement because it was way past that. She developed, as a child, macular degeneration and began losing her eyesight at a very young age. And this became a crisis for a young woman at that age and that time to start losing her vision.
Of course.
Now, yeah, and this happened a little bit after the first contact that she had. She would never call it an abduction because when the abduction subject matter came out, the patterns that were listed from various people at that time, that didn't fit her situation. She always called it a contact, the first contact. And she started to lose her vision. And then she started to have severe social problems as a young woman growing up. And her parents took her to lots of doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, because she started to, I wouldn't say lose her mind, but she was, her mind and her mind's eye were changing. Her mind's eye, her what you see with the brain is different than what your eyes see, and that's what was going on with her. But we're talking about an 11-year-old that was the first contact experience, starts to lose her eyesight, and then many years later has a second contact with a completely different group that are a more humanoid group that where she was taken aboard a craft where there is more humanoid people there. And then that's where she saw a dead body on a craft and was introduced to what would be today the MRI machine inside the craft. And as she recalls it, she told me in detail everything, that she was getting physically ill, witness to all of this, and there was a dead man inside the craft that she had been told from the extraterrestrials that this was somebody that had passed away in a war. It was just a body from a war. Now, her interfacing these two times, there was very long distance between these two events. But what happened was, because the first event took place, she began to lose her eyesight and then began to have all sorts of psychological problems, socially dealing with
question.
People.
Question. The first encounter was at what age? 11?
11, yeah.
Okay. And shortly thereafter, her eyesight began to fail. And then her mind sight began to improve dramatically.
Yeah.
And I will assume that's the psychic mind that had somehow been switched on by the experience or by the crew, whatever. Go
ahead.
No, I was going to say one other thing. The psychic mind opening its eyes, while the physical eyes being less important, was one pushing the other out of the way?
Yes, actually. Imagine having a conversation with somebody on the phone for many, many years before you meet them and having them describe to you how they see whilst being blind. So her doctors and the surgeon says you're completely blind, but
go completely blind. She went, it was lights out. Wow.
Lights out, yeah. But what she was seeing was what normally we cannot see.
Understood.
That vision turned on. So if she were sitting in front of you, she would never, look you in the eye. She'd be gazing to the left or the right, and what she would see before her would be colors, frequencies, language that looked like a cross between Egyptian and Aramaic, mathematical configurations, vector math specifically, as well as what she described as electrical impulses coming in from everywhere. So that's hard to visualize for a lot of people, considering how she spoke. Because when I spoke to her, she just sounded like a normal person. So I had met her passed away about a year and a half ago, and I knew her for about 13 years. So yeah, I met her mid-age, where she is much more mature, and she was doing spectacular things that I wasn't even aware of until she started telling me, as I continued to have conversations with over the phone, about myself and my genetic history, what my DNA and RNA mean, psychokinetic events all the time over the phone. This is never meeting me, and I this was like proof positive to me that something was going on with this woman, because I could feel her adjusting what she would refer to as the T-bar. And the T-bar was, she drew it once and she said, this is the part of the brain that I see, and it looks like an letter I with a horizontal bar above it. That's your T-bar. And that's what I'm adjusting when I'm talking to you on the phone.
Did she think that the ET visitation when she was 11 caused this with intent, or was it just a strange byproduct of whatever kind of energetics were being used around her? Was she gifted intent with this, in other words?
Oh, it was done later on. She knows it was done to her.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Hold on. We'll be right back with James in just a couple minutes. Fascinating story. Stand by. Okay, welcome back. Talking with James Martinez. He's telling a story that no one's ever heard before. This is fascinating. It's about Marianne Shenefield, blinded shortly after an encounter with ETs on a craft, but came forward with this astonishing psychic ability. It's pretty wild. Go ahead, James. I'm curious to hear about your first meeting with her, when that happened, and whatever else leads up to that event. Just take it at your leisure.
After I started talking to her over the phone, she, I would say, almost interrogated me. She wanted to know who Walter Poet was, why I was interested in radionics, and the whole mind control issue and so forth. And I was more interested, because I wasn't quite totally 100% believer, because I was more interested in what Uri was doing, because I knew what Eldon Bird was doing, and I knew what Paharich was doing with Uri. And she goes, you know what? You're always on Uri's frequency. Every time I talk to you, you're on Uri's frequency. What is it with you? And she'd always
what was the name? What did she say? What underage frequency?
Why are you always on Uri's frequency, Uri Geller's frequency?
Uri's frequency. Okay.
Yes. Because I knew.
What's the obsession with Uri? Okay.
Yeah. What's the obsession with Uri? Because I told her, and I said, you know, I experienced telepathy with him. I know what he's doing, and I know where he got his gifts from. And she goes, well, I can do all that. You'll see, but not now. And then I was looking for the defining moment where she could do something without me prompting that was of her own volition. And then one day when I was in Palm Springs, this was during Desert Storm. That war had just begun. Uh-huh. And she called me up, and she used to call me JC. That was what the word she would use. And she called up and in the morning, and this is when Desert Storm just started. And this is this was really the pivotal event that would set something is totally beyond anything I've ever heard of with this woman. And she had told me that she always had an affinity for animal life. She loved her cats. She loved all animal life and nature. And during Desert Storm, she called me one morning and said, I have an emergency and I need your help right now. I said, well, in my head, I was like, emergency? We barely know each other. What's the emergency? He goes, I need to borrow you. I need to borrow you for an event we're about to do. And I said, an event? She said, yeah. She said, it's an event. I said, the military during that time, during Desert Storm, they were running, there was a lot of ships at sea. And during that time, there was an enormous amount of dolphins around those military ships. Okay. And she had a relationship with dolphins because she could actually communicate with them and could see what they see and understood exactly what was going on with them. And there was a specific dolphin species that she was incredibly protective of, that being the pink dolphin specifically. And they're down towards South America, but these were the typical bottlenose ones that were swimming around the military apparatus during Desert Storm. And she called me up and says, I'm going to do an experiment with you, and I need you to follow these instructions. And
this lady, James, excuse me, this lady was not a shrinking violet. Here she is blind, but the vision she must have had psychically had to be just astonishing. Go ahead. This is really fascinating.
It gets really incredible. I'm incredibly privileged to work with this lady. So she calls me up that morning. She goes, let me adjust your T-bar. I want you to visualize this color Tesla blue. Pick the darkest blue in your mind. I want you to visualize this dark particular blue. And then I'm going to adjust some of the archetypes in your frequency. And we're going to cancel out anything. And I need your full attention for like 15 minutes. I'm like, okay, fine. And I did exactly what she said. And she goes, there's a problem right now with the U.S. military, and they're interfering with the breeding cycle of these dolphins. And I said, okay, so what do you want me to do? She said, I want you to visualize this color, and then I want you to do the following thing. Repeat after me, Jesus Christ is in me, through me, and around me. Say it three times, and I said it three times. That's a whole separate point before, but I did that. And then I focused on what she referred to as visualize your most favorite dark blue, like deep sea blue. It's like, focus on that, and I want you to hold that in your mind's eye during the duration of this. And she goes, I'm going to deal with this in hyperspace. And I'm just listening to what she's saying because I don't even know what she's talking about. But I'm being used kind of as a battery pack for her.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And she told me that. So 15 minutes pass. She's adjusting these various archetypes that are in my own frequency. And then after that, she hung up. And she said, thank you very much. That should do it. Then I switch on the TV. I go in the other room, and for the first time during a military operation, it was stopped because of the swimming dolphins, breeding dolphins. It was on CNN. 1 minute after I finished talking to her, I couldn't believe it. I was totally freaked out, and I was stunned because she told me she was going to interfere with that. And then I called her up. We didn't have it was a phone that was attached to the wall. I couldn't take the phone and pull it in. But I said, how did you do that? This is unbelievable. That's on TV right now. And she said, first thing she says is, don't get cocky. Don't get cocky. And I said, how can I be cocky? Nobody's ever put this. Nobody. He says, well, you can do things in hyperspace, which other people can't do. Little did I know that, you know, she had, through her teenage years and growing up, had to learn how to see again with a completely, totally different type of brain sight that it's hard to even visualize.
Right.
When you go to sleep at night, you shut your eyes and then you alter your brain waves and you go out and that's it. You see pitch black. She couldn't do that. She could never sleep normally. She had all sorts of anxiety issues. She had to deal with alcohol. She had to deal with chain smoking. She had to deal with psychiatrists and psychologists because she couldn't stop the information flow coming into the mind's eye. It was that much. It was like massive downloads of information nonstop. And
well, that's like torture. That's
it was torture. No, she was very sure. She was very angry later in her life at mm-hmm. the extraterrestrials because she.
Well, they
said,
opened the
they
door, but they
me.
Didn't give her the
yeah.
they didn't give her the handle to close it. So she was stuck. It's like a
very
raw
much
nerve.
Stuck.
Wow.
Very much stuck. Yeah. So after that took place, and I knew she was like the secret, one of the secrets of Baharaj. Uri was a very public guy, and she was a very private one. And Baharaj took her under her wing and was using her for events like that. And I would call that, I wouldn't call it psychic warfare, psychic intervention. Was the issue at that time because she could see from her home what the military was doing, where the UFO craft were, how many of them were there were, what varieties they were, and was in constant communication through the augmentation of her brain, which caused in her regular normal life enormous amounts of problems. Enormous amounts of problems. I mean, she could never sleep, had tons of anxiety, and was in the hands of a lot of psychologists and psychiatrists, one of which, a fairly well-known one, a guy, I think he was back east by the name of Dr. Tom Donahue, who gave her sodium pentothal. And she recalls both of her contacts more in detail because she literally thought she was going crazy as she was growing up. She couldn't understand what she was saying and nobody believed her. I mean, how can you sit in front of somebody and then see a whole variety bandwidth of colors as well as languages, mathematics, frequencies constantly? And this was, what she referred to as the real alien language, because it was much later in life that I was taught all of that. But initially, after that event with Desert Storm, I was flown out. She flew me out to Agawam to meet with her because I was talking to her every day at that point because I knew this was a privilege. And she considered me, for some reason, she latched on to me for a very, very, very long time. And I was doing all sorts of experiments along those lines with her because I didn't realize the level of people that she was dealing with at that time. CEOs of major corporations, some
what were they
military.
What were they doing, these CEOs and military? Were they consulting her? Were they trying to use her? Was she?
What was
the linkage?
We were doing research with a company called Berez International, and she was, for lack of a better word, remote viewing into cells for that company for a particular something that they sell called Berez Drops. She did all the R&D for it. To make sure that it was most effective. And mm-hmm. it was funny because these companies would find her by referral and they couldn't understand how she could see at a microscopic level because she could. She would explain
it.
She could look at your, she could just get a voice trace out of you, Jeff, and then keep you on the phone for an hour and then have a full download of where you're from, what your genetic history is, where's that come from, a complete diagnosis of your physical body, who you were talking to. She could describe to people, all sorts of stuff like that, and was always right. It was very, one of the things that she didn't want anybody to know about was that she was a lie detector. She didn't want anybody to know that. Some lawyer found out about that and wanted to use her for a court case, and she declined. She was very very private and also very in a certain way controlling because she was very critical of going on at that time in that particular field. I mean, it was because of her that I met Bud Hopkins and Betty Hill and Andreessen, mm-hmm. Betty Andreessen, and mm-hmm. all those people during that time. And one of the key things that she brought up to me, which I passed on to Boert, Walter Boert, was the fact that a lot of the abductions were being faked, and she knew it.
I was going to ask you that exact question. During those days, there were a lot of hucksters and fakes, and I knew that. I'd had, unfortunately, a few of them on the program here. I don't get tricked easily, but I could tell within a minute or two if somebody was probably a fraud. And I was going to ask you, she had to be well aware of the fakery that was invading a very important field of research and endeavor and knowledge.
Yeah, and she was very angry because she didn't want to associate with any of those people, which she didn't go out on the circuit and speak anywhere and this and that.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Tried to complete a book, almost got a movie done, but a lot of that, nobody could meet her demands because I was one of the people that are helping her do that. But the most important part was her explanation to me that the true contactees had a different electromagnetic signature to their body than these fake abductions, because she could see the fakers.
After the event or prior to the event? Were these people different going in, or were they different coming out?
After.
Okay. So the experience changed them somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I want to just say this right now. If I had been you, I would have felt probably very similar to you, that I was extremely privileged to have encountered this person and been taken into her confidence, so to speak. This is really a remarkable story and a major motion picture piece of cake, in my view. The question, her expanded, wide-open psychic prowess, ability, gifts, perceptions, are we to think, or can we think, that that is the mental state of at least the visitors who contacted her when she was 11? Is that their world, their mind state? Is that how they think?
Yes.
Is that how they exist?
You're precisely right. She tried to tell me, she explained to me, she says, these extraterrestrials that I deal with, they don't come out and say, hello, how are you? It's not done that way. She goes, every time there's a contact that she had, certain things had to be in alignment. Timing, frequency, color, and thought and spoken word all had to be in a certain congruency before she could communicate with them. And she'd do it daily. She could do it while she's on the phone with you. I mean, she could call you up and then she'd tell you if she knew you well. You know, one's right over your head. They're flying over your head right now. And long into our relationship, after I'd visited with her in Agawam, because I had to see what the hell was going on here. And her husband picked me up at the airport, Dan Chenefield, and I was treated like a very special guest. I was very lucky to be there, but I stayed at her home. And when I was sitting in front of her, she'd never look you in the eyes because she can't see anyway. I wanted to see that she's really blind, so I threw this pen over across the floor, and I said, "Can you see that?" She goes, "Yeah." She goes, "I have to adjust my eyesight, or you would adjust your eyesight like you put on a pair of glasses to see to read. I have to adjust my brain and eyes to go see that and pick it up," which she did in front of me. Yeah, so while I was there, went into specific details about the language of extraterrestrials. And there is a book that Prohoritz wrote called Uri. It was the most controversial of all the books about Uri Geller because it actually went into the details of who gifted him with these abilities. Uh-huh. And one of that particular group was called the Nine. And I asked her about that, and she was, I've dealt with the Nine. I know who they are. I've dealt with them. They're difficult to deal with, but I can deal with them. I
EPTs?
Prefer to deal with the EIs. Yes, yeah, of course. Uh-huh. The Nine was written quite a bit about in Baharj. Now, there's...
I've heard this before, but not. I don't have any direct knowledge about it. I've heard it. That's all.
Yeah, she was explaining to me the various ET groups that were here and the philosophy and what they were ultimately trying to do. Because your question regarding the way she'd been augmented was they wanted her to learn their language at her pace, which was a torturous, very frustrating existence to have. She went through three husbands. She had enormous health problems. Toward the latter part of her life, she had one of her legs amputated. She had enormous physical health issues as a result of all of this. Because of the frustration.
The obvious question here, forgive the common nature of it, but why didn't one of these groups help her physically? Since they were using her to a degree, they were working with her, or had they just turned her on and let her go off on her own in life?
Well, a lot of it, I think, had to do with their own free will, because other friends, girlfriends of hers, tried to get to have her stop drinking and stop smoking, but she literally went crazy from frustration. Because she cried over the phone with me many times because she couldn't sleep. She tried to have normal relationships with people, and she always ended up being the UFO lady. She hated the fact that she was kind of a spectacle. Like that article that came out was because the Inquirer came out and she got pissed off at them, and she didn't want anybody questioning her authority. So that particular reporter, she called up her friends and a UFO showed up and they saw it, and she never heard from that guy ever again. Scared the hell out of him.
Because Jack Alexander is his name.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he took off, and she didn't like him showing up and making a mockery out of her at all. She was very incredibly private, and I got all the inside track of what Baharj and what Geller was doing when he was over at CIA and working for Mossad. And she knew that and what was going on, because the thing is Shenefield, they call Uri the Geller effect, and that's completely separate from the spoon bending thing, which everybody gets caught up in. She was the Shenefield effect, which was the same thing, only it didn't garner massive publicity. And she had the reason the word of mouth got around was because she could call the UFOs, but she could also diagnose physical bodies and material objects, which is how the Perez International group came into her life, is because of her ability to look into a cell. I mean, she could look at a carbon molecule quite easily. That was no problem. She could look into space and tell you what was going on the moon or in space. It was quite easy for her to do that. And she made a gift for me while I was staying at her home. And I said, well, can you draw what it is that you see when you look at me? Draw it. And she goes, I said, what you should be doing to make extra money is artwork, because people want to see what you're seeing. They don't want to hear it. They want to see what you're seeing and try and figure out what that means in a personal life. So she actually did that for me. And it looked like dark blues and greens mixed with Aramaic calligraphy and Egyptian language. And it was those key things are the I would call the highlight of her work, because this This is a woman that wasn't educated at all, had to learn everything about this language and how to adjust frequency and do everything herself because nobody was able to help her. And one of the things that I was doing when I was working with her is getting her in touch with scientists, one of which was the guy that started and was talking about string theory. I think it was Brian Greene. Brian, he wrote the string theory. Mm-hmm. I managed to get him on the phone and get her on the phone with him, which was quite a conversation because they began to argue about what was actually going on because she could see it and he was writing about it and interpreting it incorrectly, which is quite remarkable.
Well, that's what a story. I have a lot of questions. This is fascinating. We'll have to take a break and come right back, though, and continue our conversation just right after this. Thank you for sharing all this. I'm very grateful. She wouldn't probably have been remotely interested. I'm not talking about bringing her on the program. I would have liked to have spoken to her at some point with you. This would have been amazing for me. I mean, I've got all these pieces laying around, and you've got the glue to put them together. She did. At least help. That would have been a real fascinating thing to go through. Hold on, James. We'll be right back. Just remarkable. Thank you.